same high school, man. You're at a new level here.
Hello and welcome to episode 108 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here is my lone co-host, Angie Han.
Hello!
So, we are doing it just the two of us today because poor Christy missed out on the wonderful Everybody Wants Some. I kind of just spoiled our review there, but we're going to talk about the movie Everybody Wants Some, but to start off, we're going to hit a hot topic about Angie's experience seeing Batman v Superman again in 4DX, that's what this thing is called?
Yes, it's called okay. 4DX. So if you listened to our episode last week, you know that I'm the one person in the, maybe the entire world, that liked Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. But the real reason that I went to go see it in 4DX is because that shit cost $30 a ticket, and one of my friends was able to like get me in as a plus one for like a press event, so I did that. So 4DX, if you're not aware, is, the idea is that it's going to put you in the movie by, like, having, like, different effects. Like, your seats move. Like, their seats are on, like, a gimbal so that they can, like, move. Or, like, they have, like, you know, little, like, things in them so that your seats can rumble. You know, there's, like, smell effects and, like, smoke and smog and, like, that, all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, you're supposed to feel like you're in the movie. That's the idea.
Does Jesse Eisenberg feed you a Jolly Rancher?
He does not.
Then I would pay $30 for this ticket.
You would pay $30 for Jesse Eisenberg to feed you a Jolly Rancher?
You know,
it doesn't even have to be a movie. It's just going to be some weird, like, sex thing. Just like,
you know, I think I might. As long as I can request my favorite flavor, I'm in.
What's your favorite flavor?
Well, cherry.
Oh, all
right. Who doesn't like cherry Jolly Ranchers?
I like watermelon.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to talk about this. Probably not on the podcast.
All right. So anyway, the goal of 4DX is to make you feel like you're in the movie with them, you know, so that you feel like rain when it's raining and stuff like that. But in my experience, it doesn't make you feel like you're in the movie because it's really distracting. It actually is really counterproductive because instead of making me feel like, oh, I'm in the movie with, like, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, like, riding a motorcycle in the rain, I felt like, oh, like, I would be, like, in the movie, I would be, like, invested in the movie and watching it and, like, following it along, and then suddenly just, like, something would happen, like, you know, raindrops would fall on my head, and it would just jolt me out of the movie, because it feels like you're watching a movie and someone sprayed you in the face with a spray bottle.
You,
like,
legit got wet during the rain scenes?
Not a lot, it's just, like, it's a few drops of water, so it's not, like,
right,
you know, you're
well,
not, like,
now
walking
I'm out,
out
because that would have
anything.
Ruined my hair.
No, it's not enough to ruin your hair. It's, like, literally just, like, a couple of drops. But
my bangs
just
are super sensitive. A couple of drops could ruin my bangs.
Okay, fine. Perry, you don't have to do 4DX. But, actually, I'm trying to argue that no one else should either. So, like, they have a lot of effects. Like, but for example, like, you know, when there's an action scene, it smells kind of like burning rubber. And I'm like, I don't know why this is the thing that you want me to smell, but okay. And then there's, like, a scene where there's a scene that takes place in the ocean, so then it smells like, this is a weird thing, it doesn't smell like the ocean, it smells like someone plugged in a Glade air freshener called Ocean Breeze, like, it's, like, that kind of ocean, like, sometimes when people are getting shot in the head, you feel, like, a little burst of air, like, you know, hitting you, in the head, and sometimes, like, when Batman is punching people, your seat punches you in the back, it's, like, really just, like, unpleasant and distracting.
I wonder who's the person who's directing this whole experience, because it seems to me like if something like that is supposed to immerse you more in the movie and what's happening, that, like, the actual director, like, the filmmaker needs to be orchestrating that kind of thing. Like, I feel like a Quentin Tarantino movie would be perfect for that, because he's so big into, you know, with what he did with Hateful Eight, kind of making it more of an experience. But, like, the filmmaker has to be part of this.
I mean, I feel like that's the problem. Like, I think the ideal is something like Star Tours, where, like, you're just sitting there and you feel like you're actually, like, in it. You feel like you're actually experiencing it. But the problem is that, like, you know, something like Batman v Superman, like, you know, leaving the quality of the movie itself aside, like, it's not designed for, you know, Zack Snyder didn't direct it thinking that this is how it was going to be presented. So I feel like you're right. I feel like that is a huge part of it. Like, it's, you know, so they're like maybe if someone had designed it from the ground up, knowing it was going to be in 4DX and presented that way, like, maybe they could figure out a way to, like, incorporate things more seamlessly. But it, like, just like
I liked it better, a ride like Star Tours is designed that same way with that mentality, like knowing what kind of ride it's going to be, and the whole thing is built around that concept. And also, Star Tours is what, like, a 15-minute ride versus a 2.5-hour movie.
Exactly. So it works a lot better. I mean, like, I'm not saying, I'm not ready to be like, oh, this is never, ever, ever going to work, because you don't know, like, especially like with the advent of virtual reality and stuff like that, like, you know, maybe in the future, this is kind of how we'll be enjoying things. But I feel like it feels like when you were watching, like, it feels like when 3D started to be a thing again, and we watched so many bad 3D movies that just, like, made the experience way worse instead of better. Like, it kind of feels like we're at that. If this ever actually takes off, it feels like we're in, like, that, like, really rough infancy right now.
It's funny to me that we're either talking about movies not playing in theaters anymore, like the whole experience of going to see a movie in a theater is going away, or we're talking about complicating it more. Like,
yeah.
It's just the two polar opposites, nothing in the middle.
Well, I think it's because they feel like, you know, audiences, you know, like there's, especially now that people can rent stuff on iTunes so easily, it's really hard to get people to actually get up and go to the theater. So then they keep trying to add more and more stuff, and then the tickets get more expensive, which drives people
You know what would make it more likely for me to get my ass in a theater? Is just, like, really standard movie theaters, and just make them neat and clean. Neat and clean and comfortable. Done. I'll come to a movie then. The main reason why I don't like going to the movies, like, and especially in public screenings and select press screenings, is because they put us in, like, the dingiest theaters, like the freaking 42nd Street bedbug situation. I mean, that's part of the reason I don't want to go to certain theaters.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I guess I understand if you're, you know, like, from a financial standpoint, why they want to try the 4DX thing, because you're charging $30 a ticket, and it does offer you, for better or for worse, an experience that you're not going to get at home, and, you know, so a lot of curious people might just be like, I just want to try it out. But I'm just
saying,
I'll
come over,
like,
when you're watching your next movie, and I'll shake your couch.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying, as someone who went, I did not personally think that it... I didn't find it enjoyable. I found it to be worse than a regular movie experience, and definitely not worth $30, so...
I guess it's less likely that you'll fall asleep during that super long movie, though, right?
It is a lot less likely, yes, because if you were going to fall asleep, suddenly there's going to be a rain scene and a few drops of water will sprinkle on your head, or suddenly your seat will just punch you in the back because Batman punched a bat guy in the back.
That's, like, the weirdest element I've ever heard. All right, so thumbs down for 4DX.
Yes, don't do it. Don't waste your money.
Now we're going to move on to our big review of the week. Richard Linklater's latest, Everybody Wants Some. The IMDb synopsis for that one is, a group of college baseball players navigate their way through the freedoms and responsibilities of unsupervised adulthood. That is very fair, but to be a little more specific, it's about this one guy who's a star high school baseball player, and he's going to college for the first time, where he gets in with all the fresh meat there, and it's kind of like the upperclassmen showing him the way at school. And it takes place over the course of just 3 days. So it's the 3 days before classes start and before, like, intense baseball practices start. If I went into this because I'm obsessed with Dazed and Confused, a little frustrated with the idea of calling it a spiritual sequel, because, like, what is that even? We're in an age where every single thing is called, like, a reboot, a remake, a spin-off, spiritual this, a cinematic universe. Like, really? Are we going to continue that? But,
yeah.
I mean, the headline of my review out of South By was that this is a true spiritual sequel. It felt like it came from the same universe as Dazed and Confused, just set with a different group of guys in a different place.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I don't love it as much as Dazed and Confused, but it does have that same kind of, like, feel of just capturing a very specific moment in your life, and capturing not just that moment, but, like, the way it feels when you're looking back at it, and also the way it felt in that moment when you're looking forward at at where you are in life now, if that makes sense. Like, I think Richard Linklater, I think, works with time better than, like, almost anyone, like, where he really knows how time works and how memory works and how, like, looking forwards and looking backwards work. I mean, that's kind of what drives, like, his Before trilogy. That's what made Boyhood so effective a couple years ago when that opened, and I think that this is the same thing. Like, this to me really felt like, it doesn't reflect my college experience. I was not a college baseball player. I know you guys are all so surprised. but it does, it like, you know, you watch it and it does make you think about, it does make you think back to this time when you were starting out, when you first got to college and you were starting the next chapter of your life, and everything in the world felt possible. Like, everything felt like something that you could try. Everything felt like something you could try to do or to be. And I think it captures that moment really, really well. That said, I think that one of the reasons I didn't respond to this, I mean, I really like this movie, so don't get me wrong, but I think one of the reasons that I didn't love it as much as his other ones is that it felt a little bit less naturalistic and a little bit broader than some of his other movies.
My one complaint, which is why I put it a notch under Dazed and Confused, is it's It was actually, like, a tiny bit too bro-y for my taste. It's, like...
It is very bro-y.
And like, it's normally I'm not one movie. To pick on this issue, but, like, there's almost no female perspective in this movie, because at least Dazed and Confused, you know, sometimes they're talking about, like, oh, I want to get with the girls and whatnot.
Well, but it has, like, the Parker Posey character and, like, her whole, like, side of the movie in that one.
Yeah, and we get to see them kind of navigating the same situation, so you get this big picture, but from a different perspective, too. Here, you don't get that at all. We do have one female character, Beverly, played by our favorite. We all love Zoe Deutsch very much, but, she does a really good job. She shows up in the beginning of the movie and kind of disappears, I want to say for, like, an hour of it, and then shows up again in the third act, but she does a really good job of kind of... It's almost like all the guys in the movie are going crazy the large majority of the time, and she pulls reins them in the end. So it's like the perfect transition.
I don't think she reins them in. I think that it's just that she represents another channel of college for the main character. And actually, you know me, I'm usually the one that like doesn't like it when a movie doesn't seem to have any female perspective or like seems to have a female character shoehorned in. But for some reason, this one I didn't mind too much. I think a lot of that comes from Zoe Deutsch's performance. Like she's just so good, and like she feels so like even though she's not in it that much, she owns the hell out of that role and makes the most of it and really makes her feel like a three-dimensional person.
Reining in was probably the wrong choice of words. I mean, okay, reining in terms of, like the ideas. Like, these guys are all like, let's, like, seize every opportunity and get crazy and do all this, like, nutty shit. And she kind of does it with a little more, like, a more narrow, realistic focus. And it kind of... It does rein the main character in the slightest bit.
Well, in the movie, she's a little bit older than him, right? Like, she's, like, a sophomore?
I thought she was moving in as well.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm not sure.
I mean, I get...
Either way, like,
see, I think... It's almost like I keep wanting to write, like, every time I write about the movie, like, they're you know, shenanigans on campus, but, like, are the guys even living on campus? Because they're in a house. She seems to be moving into, like, an apartment that's not a dorm.
I think that she lives on campus and they live just off campus, but I could just be projecting based on how stuff was set up at my college.
It's funny how, like, you think of it, because, you know, I went to NYU, so my college doesn't look like anything like any of the colleges I've ever seen on the big screen. Oh, that's
true. Yeah, my college didn't look like that either, but, yeah, anyway, I think that she's a little bit of a contrast to the guys in that, like, so the guys, like, over the course of these 3 days, you see them try on, like, they're always, first and foremost, baseball players, or bros, or who they are. But you see them kind of, but like as the movie goes on, you like each character develops a little bit more individual personality. Like when you first see them, you're just like, it's just this big mess of like loud, obnoxious bro dudes. But then you get to know them as individuals a little bit more. And over the course of 3 nights, you get to see them trying and discarding different identities. Like the first time they go out to a disco. The second time they go to like a country bar. And then the third time that they go out, they go to like a punk club. And then like at the very end of the movie, they go to like a theater party. So they're kind of like trying on different things. She seems a little bit more self-assured and like more confident in who she is and how she fits into the world, and I think a lot of that has to do with she explains about like how her childhood was like she went to like a fame like high school and stuff like that. So I think it's interesting because you see the guys as these people who are like the world is full of like limitless possibility about who they can be, whereas she seems
at the same time they're also like tunnel vision baseball. Like a lot of them grew up as being star baseball players, and now like baseball is their identity and existence at college.
But I feel like it works because I do feel like college is the time where you start to see. I mean, there's some things about everyone that remain the same throughout basically their whole lives, and there are some things that don't. And I feel like college is where you start to see like the differences between that because like. You know, when you're growing up, you're just always, like, the one person. But college is, like, one of your, for a lot of people, one of the first opportunities you have to, like, kind of be, like, well, what parts of me are, like, really essentially me? And what parts of me are things that I want to try to change or try to do differently or, like, try out new things?
And that's exactly what this movie explores. But it does so in, like, such a subtle manner. It's not like, you know, the main guy who's, his name is Jake and he's played by Blake Jenner. It's not like he comes like a douchebag bro who just wants to get in with the older guys and party all the time. And then in the end, he has to be like the model boyfriend. It's just like really subtle changes that are very natural responses to what's happening around him. Another thing that really amazed me about this movie is just how you actually got to know these guys to the point that you remembered their names and you remembered like what their shtick was in the end.
I didn't remember their names, but I was surprised by how well I was able to differentiate them by the end. Because they all, like...
when I was writing my review, I purposely didn't let myself go back to the IMDb because I was just curious to see how many of my favorites I remembered, and I had a much harder time remembering their real names than their screen names.
I had the opposite, actually, but I mean, that's not, like, I'm bad with names. That's not a fault of the movies. I think that they did a really good job. So which were some of your favorite characters? Like, I feel like Glenn Powell, who plays, like,
he's fantastic.
He's a womanizer, and he's, like, kind of a philosophizing kind of dude.
Have you watched Scream Queens?
I have not.
He's got a very, all right, so this is all of Scream Queens for me, but he has a very big personality in that show, and it's like, you know, you can handle a little bit of it at a time, and then you're kind of done with it. That was kind of the whole show for me, though. Here, he has the same thing, but that character is, he is kind of like the Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused for this movie. Like,
another character who I think is a little bit even more like Matthew McConaughey.
I know that too. No.
So my favorite-
I keep hearing people compare Matthew McConaughey to one or the other, but it's something about the way that character speaks that it's like a mesmerizing way where I would kind of take as fact almost anything that he said. He could convince me of just about anything.
That's fair. My favorite character, I think, was the other one that people are comparing a lot to Matthew McConaughey's character, and that's Wyatt Russell plays this, like, slightly older transfer who just, like, loves to get really stoned and, like, you know, kind of, you know, and he reminded me so much of this guy I knew in college who loved to get stoned and just, like, go on, like, these philosophical rants about, like, art and culture and society and stuff like that. So I immediately loved him.
Yeah. No, I liked him a lot too. He was really funny.
I think overall, I don't know where he's great.
I don't even know what he's been in. Really.
Wyatt Russell? 22 Jump Street.
Oh, 22 Jump Street. Oh, he was in oh my god, what is that movie called? The horror remake. We are still here. No, that's it. Ted's movie. Oh my god, it's going to bother me.
I don't know. Whatever it was, I don't think I saw it because it doesn't ring a bell.
We are what we are. We are what we are. And it is a very good movie, and he's pretty good in it, but he has a very small role in it.
This cast is great, and I feel like it's, you know, like, when you watch Dazed and Confused now, you're like, wow, this is, like, everyone in it. It's full of stars. But when he was actually first casting the movie, they weren't all big stars. And I feel like I could see this movie kind of being like that in, like, 10 years where we'll look back and be like, oh, wow, there's actually a bunch of people in there. Like, Zoe Dutch, I think, is definitely headed for greater things. I thought Blake Jenner was fantastic.
I would hope so at this point.
I'm just waiting to see which, like, Star Wars or superhero thing wants to snap her up, because, like, they would be dumb not to. Yeah.
I guess now that I'm thinking about it, the Glenn Powell role is probably more in line with Don from Dazed and Confused, because he's kind of like...
I don't know who Don is.
He's like the quick talker, and he's always given Jason London's character advice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
I guess he's
okay.
More like that. But another one that I really enjoyed was Temple Baker, who plays he's like a doofus meathead. He's one of the other freshmen. His name is Plummer in the movie, and you could probably get the sense from the film's promotional campaign, because almost every single clip and trailer they released, he's the one saying, like, a super doofy thing at the end of it. Like, he's the one that says in the trailer, he's like, I want a tail or whatever. And it just hits the point where you think something like that would grow old, but I got so used to him giving that last one-liner in moments that I kept waiting. I'm like, what nonsense is he going to say next? And, like, every single time he says something stupid, I was just in tears.
Yeah, one of the things that I've heard a lot of critics talking about is just the fact that everyone seems so surprised that they like this, like, really bro-y movie. Like, I feel like bros are getting kind of a bad rap right now, but, I mean, they're people, too, and, like, I mean, one of the things that Richard, like, there are a lot of things that are about, I guess, quote-unquote, modern bro culture that are kind of toxic or, like, negative, but I feel like he kind of really gets at, like, he doesn't really look at that, but he acknowledges that they are privileged. Like, the characters kind of talk about how when you're, like, the big, you know, like, when you're, like, the star baseball player, the world just kind of falls in place around you, like, how everyone worships you. So they do talk about that. It's not like it goes unacknowledged. But, I mean, he really, like, focuses on, like, the great things about, like, this kind of, like, you know, almost fratty culture where, like, it's just, like, the camaraderie, like, the really close friendships, like, the, you know, the easy...
He gets away with it too because he doesn't glorify it. It's not like in a broad comedy where it's some sort of like cartoonish version of this. It's like you're on the ground and experiencing it from their perspective, and through their eyes, they are like the kings of the campus. They could do whatever they want. They could treat anybody however they want, and I kind of just fell into step with them really quickly. I did have a, I needed like, I'd say 5 or 10 minutes to adjust to how they behaved and what the movie really was. But once I'm like, all right, I'm with you guys, then I was with them for the entire movie and I ended up walking away getting something out of it.
I actually like immediately was like on board. I mean, like, it's not like I like ran with a particularly like bro-y or fratty crowd in college, but I went to like a really preppy school with like, you know, lots of loud, boisterous, drunk kids. So like when the movie opened, I was just like, okay, I think I know who these people are.
Yeah. No, I definitely knew who they were. And I knew who they were in the end, but within with just enough change that I felt like everybody grew a little the entire time. And it's got
they
some
do,
really...
and it's imperceptible. Like, you know, no one has like a big like, oh, I had an epiphany.
A big revelation,
I'm a different person.
Yeah.
Like, but you just it just in the way that you see people change over the course of especially like a formative time like college, you do kind of see them like subtly become more themselves, like subtly like, you know, evolve a little bit and subtle, and like start to experience new things. And it feels special. But yeah, now Linklater's covered like everything. He's covered like childhood up until college. He's covered high school. He's covered college. He's covered like,
I actually,
you know,
asked him during my drunken interview
years.
In South by Southwest. I'm like, if you do a third of this series here, what would it be? And he said something along the lines of like the late 80s. And he referenced how the music scene changed then. And he said it would be darker. I don't know. It obviously he likes to, he's a talker, so I wouldn't take that as like he's gonna make a third one and it's gonna be darker in the late 80s. But when I did ask him, he had that idea came to mind pretty quickly.
I mean, like, because when you watch this movie, you can almost sort of like the characters in this aren't like the character in Boyhood, but you can kind of connect it in your head of like, you know, just like a, oh, okay, so, like, the kid in boy, like, in my head, it all kind of fits together, like, oh, okay, so there was the kid in Boyhood, and then he went to high school, and he was dazed and confused, and now he's, like, in this, and then, like, he's eventually gonna become Ethan Hawke in, like, the Before movies.
I was thinking that maybe the next one could be, like, a first job out of college or something, you know, where that kind of, like, the workforce family kind of environment. Like, almost like an Empire Records, you know? Like, I could see Linklater doing a spin on Empire Records.
I would watch that, but to be fair, I'd watch Linklater do anything.
So would I. Yeah. I am completely, just anything he touches, I will want.
Yeah, he's one of those directors that as soon as his name on a project, I'm like, well, that just became one of my most
anticipated
movies.
You know what else you should want? And, like, you in particular, Angie, they're making an Everybody Wants Some Beer through the Alamo Draft House, and we got to taste test it, and it was free. And you know what's funny is you know how particular I am with beers. This was, like, a beer made for me. It was my kind of beer.
Nice. All
right.
Which basically
meant
have if they ever distribute it over here, then I'll definitely try it.
All right. So try the beer, and we both really loved Everybody Wants Some.
Yep.
Which hit select theaters this week, correct?
It hit select theaters this weekend. I think it hit, like, New York and LA, but it's going to be rolling out over the
okay.
next few weeks.
So as it comes to your town, be sure to keep an eye out for this one, because it is a big winner. So that is a wrap on episode 108 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know where to find us. Go to iTunes, where you can subscribe and comment and rate, and then you can go to our website, popcornprosecco.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco, and then the two of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. And Christy is not on this week, but you can find her on Twitter at Christy Puchko, that's KRISTYPUCHKO. And she writes all over the web, but you can find her career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Nailed it. You can catch me on Twitter at PNemiroff, and then my writing is on collider.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bang, bang, a boogie to the boogie, sit up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock.